I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Well, let's get right to it this morning. I know you're busy. You have a lot of things to do today. But I want to open with just a couple of minutes of what the readers tell me. I have a person in Texas who writes in and says that if anybody might be able to convince this person to become a Republican, apparently he's a Democrat now, it might be me. I consider that to be a great compliment and a challenge that I may or may not be up to. Marlene from the Midwestern area, she writes in and says, informative and great ideas. And she made her comment about one of my blogs or one of my podcasts titled, It's Not About Laws, It's About Implementation. That was one where I talked about the issue of we have plenty of laws on gun control, but we don't have databases or technology that allows the laws to be implemented correctly around background checks and multiple purchases of rifles, etc. One of my favorite podcasts was when I talked about the scientist, the economist who received the $1.1 million for the Nobel Prize, in which he determined that consumers, that's right, you and I, don't make rational decisions, that sometimes we're impulsive. Sometimes we buy stocks that are high and sell them when they're low. Sometimes we buy houses at a higher price and sell them when they're low. Stupid us, that's what I say. Anyway, Kelly, another Midwestern person, writes, yes, you knocked it out of the park with this one. And I can tell you I felt like it because I have never, ever seen such a ridiculous $1.1 million awarded to an economist for discovering absolutely nothing, Another person, I don't know where this person is from, but it looks like a male. He talks about a nice paragraph and fastidious urging commented here. He says he enjoys all my podcasts, and he particularly commented on a longtime podcast, which was Sanders has a healthy idea with sick marketing, says a Kansas Democrat. I interviewed a Kansas Democrat on that episode and got a number of good comments in. A number of things come back in some of these podcasts. Definitely deserves more thought. Great point about Corker and politicians telling the truth. Some people comment pretty regularly, other people do not. But I like the comment some people say. It's challenging, provocative, and makes them think of things they wouldn't normally think of. So if you have some comments, please send them in. If you want me to read your name in the podcast, I will. Otherwise, if I know where you are, I'll say just you're a Midwestern Republican or a Midwestern Democrat. Now, let's go back to something else that's probably interesting. And by the way, I'm not going to comment on some of the things that are in the news today. I mean, we know that John McCain, he is more like Trump than we think. When he called one of the reporters who asked him a question that was a dumb question. Yes, McCain came back with the same kind of thing that probably more politicians should come back with more often. McCain flattens Fox News reporter. Why would you ask something that dumb? The issue to me is, why did it take McCain 30 or 40 years to understand that these reporters ask things that are dumb? That's just what happens. They ask dumb questions. Now, the issue of Trump offering the grieved military father $25,000 in a phone call, what can you make of this? I mean, what do the Democrats make of this? Trump obviously was empathetic. Obviously, he's on the phone with somebody who lost his son. And perhaps the person said how financially strapped he was, and Trump offered him money. For this, Trump gets in trouble. I don't get it. If you or I offer this person some money, but for the president to do it, it's bad, it's horrible, it's not politically correct, it's not appropriate. I just think that's a bunch of crap. I mean, look, Trump is an empathetic person. He's on the phone to somebody. The guy's crying. The guy maybe has big financial problems. Trump's a billionaire. What would a normal person do? Try to help. Trump tries to help. Oh my gosh. The Democrats go crazy over it. I mean, what can you say about that? It's just silly. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about the North Korean situation. It may sound like I'm reading something, and I will be, but it's something that I wrote, it's something that I own, and I want to read it to you, and then I'll come back and make a comment on it. North Korea has our attention. From Washington to Seoul, planners are shaking the dust from shelved contingency plans on how to react in the case of all-out war. In the case of all-out war. Ships are quietly steaming towards the Yellow Sea. Fighters and bombers are quietly being rotated towards the theater. The UN agenda is no doubt being reviewed. The word war is being whispered again. It began a few months ago. Remember that. The word war is being whispered again. In August, South Korea circulated photographs of the hull of the Shonan recovered from the bottom of the Yellow Sea, about 6 miles from the coast of North Korea. The recovered ship's damage is consistent with an explosion caused by a torpedo. Remember that? A torpedo. Yesterday, North Koreans fired artillery shells at a South Korean island. After a series of threats as a response, the South Koreans fired artillery shells into the water off the coast of North Korea. Additionally, the North Koreans have shared missile and nuclear technology with third-party states. It has engaged in counterfeiting, weapons and drug smuggling, money laundering, and kidnapping of Japanese citizens. It has positioned enough artillery pointed at Seoul that it could destroy every building within 2 hours. North Korea recently hosted a tour of a facility with thousands of centrifuges busily extracting weapons-grade uranium. Thousands of centrifuges busily extracting weapons-grade uranium. It is tempting to mock the Obama administration for extending rhetorical diplomacy to America's enemies. Or perhaps one might be tempted to criticize the Bush administration for not having invested more sincerely in similar efforts. Those critics have fallen silent. Both the Bush and Obama administration fashioned plausible foreign policy toward North Korea in light of the fact that there were no good options from which to choose. No good options from which to choose. North Korea has made fools of diplomats who would help it and proven its worst critics correct. Perhaps North Korea thinks America cannot support a third war with its forces committed to Iraq and Afghanistan. While it is true that America is not flush with uncommitted combat brigades, she still bristles with warships and warplanes, which can easily supplement the South Korean defense. It had better think twice, for the American nuclear deterrent is more than capable of repaying any such attack with interest. But the North must know all of this, which concerns me. The North may well be playing the familiar game of provocation to gain at negotiation. If so, this is a dramatic escalation of the game. But more troubling, it may be acting on a tacit commitment from China to intervene if the North does end up starting a war. Or The leadership in the North may be so crazy or desperate that it's trying to provoke a Jonestown-style destruction of its own people. A Jonestown-style destruction of its own people. That means it's trying to provoke its own suicide. In any case, the situation is deserving of attention and concern. Now, sounds pretty much like it was written yesterday, except for the reference to the Obama and the Bush administration. The word war was discussed, nuclear deterrent, thousands of centrifuges. But no, I wrote this November 23rd, 2010, 7 years ago. You see, the problem with reading news, whether it's the Washington Post or any news, is you only can read it in a static environment. You don't see the context of history. And remember, my favorite guy, President Truman, said the only things that are new under the sun is the history you haven't read. The longer I live, the more I understand what he meant. North Korea today is not unlike North Korea in 2010. They have the same levels of provocation, the same threats of war, the same outrage by the North Koreans, the same outrage by our politicians. But the key thing I wrote about in that blog, by the way, was the concept was there are no good options. And there aren't any. There are no good options. North Korea will continue to build a nuclear threat. Even if Tillerson and Trump were able to negotiate some sort of artificial agreement where they agree to not develop nuclear bombs for the next 10 or 15 years, similar to the Iran agreement, or they agree to stop their centrifuges, similar to the Iran agreement, even if that happens, and it becomes a political win for Trump, they're going to continue anyway. Instead of taking them 5 years, it takes them 10 years, but eventually they wind up with nuclear capability. And they clearly are going to share this nuclear capability with other countries. There's not a lot that America can do about that, short of simply wiping out their nuclear capability. And that's not going to happen, because that would be a first strike by us, and that's not going to happen. Didn't happen 7 years ago, didn't happen 17 years ago, and it won't happen this year either. So those things are going on in any event. What I call the North Korea issue. It's part of the landscape of a world where there are 70 or 80 or I don't know how many sovereign countries. And these sovereign countries believe that they have the same rights to develop weapons and nuclear capability as America. And it's hard to say that we as a sovereign country can intervene that directly in another sovereign country's rights, even if the UN or the international community, whoever they are, agree that it's okay. It's hard to inject yourself in someone else's sovereign nation. It's almost arrogant, by the way, but we've done it before and we'll continue to do it in the spirit of world peace. And maybe we have that level of moral authority granted to us from World War II. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we can, as a sovereign country, dictate what other sovereign countries can or cannot do. But we're doing it, and we'll see where it leads. In my case, I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. I believe the biggest deterrent always is going to be having bigger weapons than the other guy. That may sound like I'm a hawk or somebody who believes in war. Obviously, I don't, right? Who would believe in killing the other person? But I know this, if the other person truly believes that he's going to be destroyed, it is going to be a deterrent. Now, yes, there are countries with suicidal tendencies, but we can't stop that. But we can continue to build our own weapons and our own country strong enough that whoever would attack us, we'd be able to retaliate in logarithmic retaliation. So that's all today on North Korea. And I did have a point, you may have missed it, and that is that when you're reading articles, whether it's the Washington Post or the Kansas City Star or the New York Times, try to look for some historical context. Is what you're reading static? Is it just happening now? Or has it been happening for the last 40 or 50 or 60 years? In which case, we need to look at it in the context of history. Not easy to do, I know, since no writer wants to write an article that's provocative and then have its intent or have its impact reduced because in the context of history, what's being said has been said 10 times before over the last 50, 60, 70 years. It goes the same for criticizing Trump. It's no news that the Democrats or the other party criticizes the president. It's been going on historically with every president. I have looked at it, maybe not at the level that a PhD candidate would, but I can't find a president where both sides loved him, where he wasn't criticized. You find just the opposite. Presidents make decisions, they get criticized. Now, I'm going to leave this podcast for now because I don't want to get into the tax cut issue or the health issue, because the more you read about the health issue, the more you see how complicated it is. I mean, you see reports now that say, oh, wait a minute, this new Trump decision to cancel the payments to the insurance companies may also create a reduced cost for some group of individuals. I read the article on that, and I frankly couldn't understand it. Maybe someone could explain it to me, that by not paying the insurance companies, individuals who have Obamacare would now get reduced rates. I think it has something to do with the fact that if the insurance companies aren't paid, they raise their rates, which means more people now fall into the area where they can't afford insurance, which means if they apply for Obamacare, they get tax credits. And if we give them more and more tax credits, then of course it now follows that the government will pay more money. The calculations of that in principle make sense. I just don't know if arithmetically it's actually proven. Think about it. We don't pay the insurance company, so they raise their rates. So more people now need help in their insurance. The government gives them tax credits, which is taxpayer money. And as a result, it costs the government, it costs the taxpayer more money in the long run. Do you see the circular nature of that argument? Now, I read the article this morning that explains that. I understand it in principle. I just don't know what the numbers actually are. I've not seen the actual calculations. I don't know if that's an argument for going ahead and paying the insurance companies or if it's an argument that the whole structure of the Obamacare in the first place didn't make any sense. And depending on your partisan belief, you probably take one position or the other, or maybe both. So that's all for October 19th. I hope I said a few things that made sense to you and were somewhat provocative and maybe give you some thought when you're reading articles and think about historical context. The article that I read, by the way, was from almost over 7 years ago that I wrote about North Korea. And I could write it today, change a word or two, and it would be totally appropriate and totally accurate. So I can't get too excited when I read about North Korea's situation, because in some cases, probably these writers, if they're old enough, pulled things they wrote 10 or 15 years ago, did a search and replace, and repurposed them for today's news. And that's all on October the 19th. Remember, if you have a comment, write to webtalkwithbob@gmail.com or send in a comment, and I'll talk about them. Every once in a while, I'm going to review the comments I get. Most of them are good. I've got a few bad comments. I don't see any point in reading those. But generally, people think I'm maybe move the facts a bit, which I try not to do, or I'm more Republican than they think I should be. In any event, it's what I feel. It's what I believe to be true. It's an opinion from the heartland of America. Yes, and I watch the TV shows, and I'll guarantee you, my opinion is just as good as the ones you see on television. Now, I'm going to make one more point before I totally leave you for the day, and that is I was watching one of the TV shows the other day, and one of the ladies, could have been a man, it's not really relevant what gender they were, but the comment was the following. They criticized Trump. They said, look at Trump. When he wants to inflate his wealth, his real estate's worth $50 million. Then when he wants to pay his taxes, his real estate's only worth $30 million. She had it reversed, as a matter of fact, because other than the fact you're arguing for lower valuations for tax rates, owning real estate gives you the right to depreciate the property. And most people, when they depreciate property, want the highest value they can get for tax purposes. You can appreciate $100 million a year property and get a sizable reduction in your taxable income versus depreciating a $30 million property. And that's different than the tax rate. I get it. But the point is, these people on television know less than you or I. They are there for the most part because they pitched the right person. They were in the right place at the right time, but they're not smarter than us. I remember reading Steve Jobs, things that he wrote years and years ago. When he was a young man, I mean in his 20s, he made the comment after pitching Hewlett Packard and a number of companies on his Apple computer, and of course they were not interested in funding it, he said, I began to realize these people that were vice presidents or presidents of these large corporations weren't any smarter than I was. So I just started my own company. I think he's right. When I watch TV and I see the questions and I see the comments, they're not smarter than we are. They're just there. We're not. Think about it. Just because they're on TV, just because they're dressed nicer than we are, or maybe as good as we are, just because they seem more articulate than we are, they're not smarter. They've not researched it as much. They don't know as much. Their opinion is not any better than ours, except for the fact they've got 5 million people listening to them who think they are. But hopefully there's another 150 million people out there that know they're not. Our ideas are just as good as theirs, if not better. And we do have attention to the details. Keep listening. Bob Sherwood signing off. WebTalkWithBob@gmail.com. Courtesy of